The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter number 14, text number 17, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 13th, 2010, in Durban, South Africa.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 14. Lord Krishna explains the yoga system, text number 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nishkinshana Mai Anurakta Chaitasa Shanta Mahanta Akila Jiva Vatsala Kamai Analabdha Dhiya Dushanti Te Yat Nairapeksham Navidu Sukham Mama Niskinshana Mai Anurakta Chetasa Shanta Mahanto Kila Jiva Vatsala Kamairana Labda Dio Jushanti Te Yanaira Pekshyang Navidu Sukham Mama Nishkinshana Maya Yanurakta Chetasa Shanta Mahanto Kila Jiva Vatsala Kamairana Labda Dio Jushanti Te Yanaira Pekshyang Navidu Sukham Mama Niskinshana. Without any desire for sense gratification, Mai, in me, the Supreme Lord, Anurakta Chetasa, mind constantly attached, Shanta, peaceful, Mahanta, great souls without false ego.
Great souls without false ego.
Akila. To all. Jiva. Living entities. Vatsala.
Affectionate well-wishers.
Kamai. By opportunities for sense gratification. Analabdha. Untouched and unaffected. Diya, whose consciousness Jushanti experience. Te, they. Yet, which. Nairapeksham, achieved only by complete detachment. Navidhu, they do not know. Sukham, happiness. Mama, my. Translation in purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Those who are without any desire for personal sense gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful, without false ego, and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification. Such persons enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. Purport. The pure devotees always experience transcendental bliss in their service to Sri Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure. Thus they are completely detached from material pleasure and they do not desire even liberation. Since all others have some personal desire, they cannot experience such happiness. Pure devotees always desire to give Krishna conscious happiness to all others, and therefore they are called Mahanta, or great souls. In the course of a devotee's service, many opportunities for sense gratification arise, but a pure devotee is not tempted or attracted and does not fall down from his exalted transcendental position. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Bada Kamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sajiva Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakamvitamscha. Such a great soul is described here by Sri Krishna. That great soul is known as the devotee of Krishna. The devotees of Krishna are very, very dear to Krishna. Very, very dear to Krishna. That is why, if we want to approach Krishna, we must approach Krishna through his devotee. Krishna confirms in the Adi Purana, Yeme Bhakta Jana Partha Name Bhaktashtate Janaha Mad Bhaktanam Chiye Bhaktas Teme Bhakta Tamamata. The one who is my devotee, Yeme Bhakta Jana Partha Ostanaprita Name Bhaktas. He is not my devotee. That's a pretty heavy thing. Krishna says, my devotee is not my devotee. So what is he saying? He's saying, but the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So Krishna is helping us to be devoted to his devotees. by explaining what is the actual position of his devotee. If we hear from Krishna, what is the actual consciousness of the devotee? Then we can first of all recognize who is a devotee by seeing what are the qualities and characteristics. Actually, it is very important we learn how to recognize who is a devotee. Because if we do not recognize who is a devotee, how we can become devotee of the devotee? If we become devotee of the bogas, then we become bogas. Shvavivara ushta karai samstitak parishak pashu narjata karma pato peta jatu namagada graja. In this material world, people are not devotees of devotees, they are devotees of dogs, hogs, camels, asses. You see? You become a devotee of a dog, hog, camel, ass, you become dog, hog, camel, ass. So we have to learn to distinguish between dog, hog, camel, ass and Vaishnava, you see, devotee. So Krishna is very kindly giving us detailed description. Who is that person? Who is that soul? Who is that jiva? Who is actually my devotee? He has no desire for personal gratification. He's always thinking of Krishna. His every thought is Krishna conscious in all times, all places, and all circumstances. Unflinching, unfailingly absorbed in thinking of Krishna always. And because he's always thinking of Krishna, and when he speaks, what comes out of his mouth? Gramya Gita? No. If he's always thinking of Krishna, he is always speaking of Krishna naturally. And if he is always thinking of Krishna and speaking of Krishna, when he acts, then his actions will be for Krishna. Also. And that is natural. So that is a great yoga, that is the greatest of all yogis. In general, the yogis, they are struggling by the mechanical system, yam, niyam, asana, pratyahara, etc. How to fix the mind on one point. Mechanically. Before I had the good fortune of coming in contact with Prabhupada's movement, Prabhupada's teaching, I was trying to become self-realized. And I heard of something called Self-Realization Institute, Self-Realization Fellowship. So I subscribed to their correspondence course, their yoga course, how to become self-realized. And I remember the first lesson was, you light one candle and you sit and stare at the candle. So I didn't find any rust in that candle. It was very dry meditation, you see. They want to train you how to mechanically fix your mind on one point. But actually that is part of the yoga system, Patanjali system, that you become absolutely perfect in the ability to fix the mind on any point in which you choose to fix it. And when you reach that point of perfect control of your mind, then you fix it on Vishnu. That is the Patanjali yoga system. But we see that even the great stalwarts on this pathway, the Ashtanga system, such as Vishwamitra Muni, even the greatest stalwarts on this pathway, because they're not getting any rest from that, putting the mind on one point, as soon as there is an opportunity for sense gratification, yoga finished. But in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti yoga system, we are blessed with fixing our mind on the most beautiful, wonderful object of meditation. Prabhupada explains, this is real transcendental meditation. That was my next attempt after the candle flame failed to enlighten me. Then I tried Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's transcendental meditation. It cost me 1 month rent to pay for my diksha fee. No fee, no diksha. You have to pay for your diksha like buying an automobile. So I paid my diksha fee and I went, his disciple took me to one motel room, very spiritual atmosphere, a motel. He had to put the picture of Maharishi there with some flowers. I had to bring some flowers and fruit offering for my guru to be Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And then he gave me my secret mantra, Aing. I wasn't supposed to tell you. Aing, 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 Aing. So, I was doing my Aing mantra twice a day for 20 minutes. I was trying to get off the ground, you know, Aing, Aing, Aing. It's like like at the airport, you know, the plane is taking off on the runway, but after a while it lifts off, you see. I was waiting for the liftoff. Aing, I was revving up my jet engine. Aing, 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 nothing happened. I'm sitting here in the modes of material nature, depressed as anything. I just lost 1 month's rent and now I got a mantra that doesn't do anything. You see? But still I had faith there was such a thing as self-realization. After being cheated by the candle flame and by the Aing so-called mantra, still I had faith that there was a process by which I could truly become liberated from all of the horrible depression and anxiety I was going through on a regular daily basis. I didn't give up my faith. And then, one friend, I had not yet met devotees. There were no devotees around at that time where I was living. But I met one friend of mine who had been in San Francisco in 1967 when devotees were making the Hare Krishna mantra popular up and down Haight Street and on Hippie Hill. The mantra became very popular in Haight-Ashbury. So he had picked up that mantra from the devotees and he introduced me to that mantra and it was so wonderful. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now I've, with that mantra, Hare Krishna mantra, my mind was finally finding something that was very sweet, very relishable. And I could feel, despite chanting Hare Krishna, it was like getting on a magic carpet and just going whoosh, into other dimensions of consciousness. So, this yoga system, where that object of meditation is not some mechanical point, but is actually the sweetest, most beautiful person, Krishna. He's so beautiful. He's so merciful. His smile is so enchanting and his flute playing is so attractive. He's the supreme superstar. And he's not a snob like the superstars of this world. Snobbish. He's just a wonderful, wonderful person, full of love, full of mercy. So, I discovered this mantra by my friend's kindness. He gave me. And then I found one. I was going through one gift shop and they had a beautiful Brijbasi poster, this big, you know, that Radha Govinda. Now it's ISKCON prints that also. BBT has the Radha Govinda poster. And it's a broad Brijbasi painting. So beautiful. Radha Govinda. So somehow I chanced upon that and I immediately purchased. And I set up a little altar there in my apartment. And I would chant Hare Krishna and I would just meditate on Radha Govinda. I didn't know who Radha was because I had gotten a Gita. I didn't mention Radha in the Gita. But I said, well, she really loves Krishna. It's obvious she really loves him. Just see the way she's looking at it. She really loves him like anything. So that impressed me. Whoever she is, she really loves Krishna. So in this way, we have the most wonderful object on which to fix our consciousness. the Supreme Beautiful Person, surrounded by so many loving devotees who worship Him and adore Him like anything. And we can enter into that same mood, that Brijabasi mood, of being completely absorbed in thinking about Krishna, talking about Krishna, bowing down to Krishna, serving Krishna, offering food to Krishna, eating the remnants of the food offered to Krishna, studying the teachings of Krishna, vibrating the teachings of Krishna, spreading the teachings of Krishna. In this way, we are blessed with the most wonderful life of transcendental happiness. Because let's face it, this material world is miserable. Even if you have the best position here with all money, power, and prestige, it is sure and certain to be all taken away by the influence of the sun. With every rising and setting of the sun, all of your material happiness is being taken away. But Prabhupada says that by this Krishna Katha we can fight the sun. You see, the sun has come to steal away all of our happiness, material happiness. Take away our longevity, to kill us actually. The sun is robbing us of our life by his rising and setting. He is robbing us of our life, Prabhupada explains. But by this Krishna consciousness, we can fight the sun. No, you're not going to take away my duration of life. I will be immortal. You see. I will take the shelter of Krishna. I will regain my original identity. Prabhupada said, it's not that you get a new body when you leave this one, if you're Krishna. No, you get your old original body. Of course, that old original body is not old like an old man's body. It is. This is Krishna's Navayovanam. That spiritual body, which is our old original body, it is also Navayovanam, eternally youthful body. So we get back that old, ever fresh new body, leaving aside this aging, disease prone, death prone body, material body. Such a nice thing, this Krishna consciousness. So a wonderful thing. How fortunate we are that Prabhupada has given us this wonderful, wonderful gift of Krishna consciousness. We don't have to suffer anymore. All we have to do is reconnect with that actual identity of the self. All we have to do, in other words, is become self-realized. All we have to do is realize who is, what is the individual self? Who am I as that individual self? Who is the Supreme Self? What are his qualities and characteristics? And how can I perfect my relationship with that Supreme Self through loving service? If we take this simple system, this simple pathway, then all the bad qualities, the lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, the illusion, the envy, which have been infecting our consciousnesses for millions and millions of lifetimes, causing us endless miseries and distresses, we can completely become free from all of it. And become fully awakened in Krishna consciousness. As Krishna is describing here, they enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. So this detachment from the material world is the most important thing. So that detachment can only be developed to the degree that we become attached to Krishna. You see, that material detachment is a concomitant factor of spiritual attachment. You cannot artificially cultivate material detachment in a way that will be ultimately successful. You may temporarily cultivate it by some process of negation, Mayavadi philosophy, neti-neti. But in due course of time, aruya krishchena parang param tada padanyajo nadir kudyushmadangriyaha. Even if you try to negate this material sense gratification, sooner or later you will come back to it again. Patanti adho, they fall down again. Why? Because they have no attachment for those beautiful, charming lotus feet of Krishna. Actually, that detachment doesn't work. They try to deny, they say, not this, not that, not this, not that, but they're still attached to neti neti. They say, I've become free from all attachments, but they are so attached to their neti neti. That is also attachment. If they want to become truly detached, they must also detach from neti neti. You've neti neti'd everything, chopping, 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 chopping. Now I'll do a neti neti on neti neti also. Get rid of your neti neti. You've gotten rid of everything else. You've chopped down the whole forest, now get rid of your chopper also. You see? Get rid of your chopper. Now you must deny denial also. They've denied this, they denied that, deny, deny. Now deny denial. Now what will you do? When you deny, when you've denied everything and now you've said there's nothing left to deny except for denial itself, now what will you deny now? What will you do now when you deny denial, you see? Then at that point, there's nothing you can do except to begin accepting. You see? But you cannot accept anything of this material existence. At that point, one is ready for a bona fide spiritual master who can enlighten him in the science of Krishna consciousness. So we see that throughout the history, those impersonalists who are actually very genuine and very sincere seekers of absolute truth, who are not envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they became Krishna conscious. The Kumaras, for example, Shukadev Goswami. Prabhupada actually distinguishes in one lecture between a Mayavadi and an impersonalist. The impersonalist has advanced to the point of understanding impersonal Brahman, but he has no envy of, he doesn't deride the personality of Godhead. The Mayavadi, he is very much opposed. He says, oh, that's Maya. The form of Krishna, that is Maya, you see. He has this enmity against God. Such a person, Mayavadi Basha, Shuni Loi, Hai Sarvanash, he can never realize the truth because of his envy of the Supreme. But an impersonalist who's not a Mayavadi, he just hasn't heard this concept yet of the transcendental form of God. He's negated material form, understanding its temporary nature. So he's advanced to the point of impersonal understanding. But he's not envious. If someone actually comes and tells him about the transcendental form of Krishna, he becomes excited and happy. Wow, that's great. You see? So, this is the most important thing, that we cultivate genuine detachment, not the so-called detachment of the Mayavadi. The genuine detachment of becoming attached to Krishna. Ye yatamang prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajam yaham. Inasmuch as they surrender unto me, I reward them. So, that attachment to Krishna, that must be cultivated. Krishna is giving us so many ways to become attached. It's like there is prasad. It's very easy to become attached to gulab jamuns. And there is wonderful devotee associations, so many wonderful devotees. Devotees are so sweet, they're so wonderful. We have to become more and more attached to the devotees by always thinking very wonderful thoughts about them, seeing their virtues. Of course, we know in the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, the first offense against the Naam The first offense against the name is to blaspheme or criticize the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy names of the Lord all over the world. So some people say, well, I know how I'm going to avoid offending the devotees. I'll just go live somewhere else by myself. I'll go live in the forest, and that way I won't commit any Vaishnava aparadha. But is that a practical program? Prabhupada told us to live in the company of devotees. So if I go away, then that is also offense. I'm disobeying Guru Maharaj's order, Prabhupada's order. So that means I have to remain in the company of Vaishnavas. At the same time, I must avoid being offensive towards the devotees. So, how will I avoid the offenses? That means we have to be proactive in our relationships with devotees. We have to be proactive in our thoughts about devotees, of always thinking very wonderfully, oh, this devotee has this nice quality, that devotee has that nice quality. Always appreciating the wonderful qualities of devotees. This is wonderfully explained by our Narottam Das Thakur. In his nice bhajan, Nama Samkirtan, he says, what is that? He says, Anande Bolo Hari Bhaja Vrindavan Shri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majai Aman. Ecstatically chant Hare Krishna Mantra. Worship the holy Vrindavan Dham. Always meditate on the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Vaishnavas. So not only is my spiritual master worshipable, every Vaishnava's lotus feet is my object of meditation. This is the teaching of Narottam Das Thakur. So we must find that way to always be appreciating the devotees. If I have a chance to meet one devotee, I should be very interested to know, what are the wonderful qualities of this Vaishnava, you see? Every devotee is an ocean of wonderful qualities. So if we can appreciate the wonderful, wonderful qualities of the devotees, then Krishna will say, oh, you are devoted to my devotees? Yes, you are my devotee. So it is actually not difficult to become Krishna conscious. If we can simply appreciate those persons who have given their lives in the service of Krishna, then our Krishna consciousness will become automatically manifested. To the degree of our appreciation of the servants of Krishna, our love for Krishna will automatically be manifest within the heart. That's why this society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is the greatest blessing of Krishna upon us, to help us to become Krishna conscious. So let's see what other points are here. So many points. Whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification. That's an interesting statement, because you could say, well, he never takes those opportunities for sense gratification. Obviously, he wouldn't do that. He wasn't affected. But the point is, even internally, he's not carried away by the thought of them. One thing is not doing it, you see. But not to even have his consciousness affected by it, you see. That's even more powerful. There's a wonderful shloka in this connection in the Bhagavad Gita. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudrabhapa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve shushantam apnoti nakamakami. This principle is described here in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text number 70. A person who is not affected by the desires for sense enjoyment, this is just like the ocean, which is ever being filled with so many waters from so many rivers but never changes its level. So that is the devotee. The thought may enter the mind, but it doesn't affect the devotee. An object of sense gratification may be present before the devotee, but he's not affected by it. The thought could be there, well, here's an opportunity for sense enjoyment. But the devotee says, no, thank you. Maya offers him, well, here's a beautiful young girl, why don't you enjoy? And the mind says, oh, beautiful young girl that I can enjoy? No, thank you. In this way, the thought of enjoying a beautiful young girl may enter the heart. But the devotee says, no, thank you. Not interested. Vishaya nanivartante nirahar rasyadehina rasyavarsang rasyopyasya parang vishva nivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by what? Experiencing a higher taste. He is fixed in consciousness. So, the beautiful young girl may be there, but it's not very attractive, not very appealing to the devotee. If one has something more appealing, the less appealing thing is not of interest. If someone offers you ¥1,000,000, it may be appealing. Prabhu, here, I have ¥1,000,000 I'd like to give you. Oh, really? Wow. But I say, but now here I have ¥1,000,000,000. Well, the million all of a sudden is not so attractive anymore. Here's ¥1,000,000,000, Prabhu. Here's two boxes. This has ¥1,000,000,000, this has ¥1,000,000,000. You see? The million is pretty appealing, but when it's compared to ¥1,000,000,000, it loses its luster, you see? So, material sense gratification is like ¥1,000,000,000, but Krishna consciousness is ¥1,000,000,000. So, simply we have to cultivate that higher consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And then any attractive thing of this material world, it will not be appealing. Not be appealing. Our consciousness will not be diverted by it. See what other points are there. See, we're usually in the class at what time? I'm over time already. 8:30 it stops? It goes till 9? I don't want to get in trouble with the management. Be yanked off the Vyasa-san. What? I'm so deaf I can't hear what you're saying. All till 9 o'clock, thank you. Sorry about that. Okay, so we'll speak a few more minutes and we'll have some open up for questions. Now this is the most wonderful of all the qualities of the devotee, merciful to all living entities. We've heard this expression, an ocean of mercy, many, many times. We should not take it as simply a cliche, an ocean of mercy. We should try to actually understand what is the meaning of this phrase, an ocean of mercy. Actually, it is a rough analogy. Because an ocean, it has some point, bottom point. In other words, the ocean of this material world, there's some limitation. It has certain borders. It's not unlimited ocean. Of course, we can use it as an example of unlimited for our feeble minds to try to understand. But actually, it is limited. The material ocean is limited also. Even though it appears unlimited from a relative point of view, it is also limited. So, the ocean of mercy of a devotee is not limited like the material ocean. there's no point at which the mercy of the devotee ends or disappears. You cannot find the bottom point beyond which the mercy is not there. This is the point. The mercy of the devotee is unlimited. There is that one great follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was praying that, may I take all the sinful reactions of all living entities throughout the whole material existence. May I take all of their sinful reactions so that they can become delivered. Let all their sufferings come to me. Prabhupada explains, actually, this devotee, what's his name? Vasudev Dutt?
Huh? Vasudev Dutt.
Yes, that's me. Vasudev Dutt. He's more merciful than Jesus. Jesus was willing to take the sins of his disciples, you see. But this Vasudev Dutt, he's willing to take the sin of all the living entities upon himself. You see. This is called ocean of mercy, you see. There's no limit to how much suffering he's willing to take upon himself so that the living entities can become delivered. So kind is the Vaishnava. He's willing to suffer unlimitedly for our benefit. This is Vaishnava. He's not asking anything in return. He just wants to serve us. That is Vaishnava. By bringing us back to Krishna. That is Vaishnava. So we can ask now if there's any questions. Yes?
I just wanted to make a comment.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask a question.
Okay.
My comment is that, and actually it's my key word for the day, it's opportunity.
Very good.
And in the purport you were reading about... there's so many opportunities for sense gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just thinking that Srila Prabhupada's books are so important because they're giving those who take the books an opportunity to associate with the devotees and to go back to Krishna. So we're doing the opposite of what the so-called materialistic people are actually doing. So that's a wonderful opportunity. So everybody should take the opportunity to give the opportunity to those.
That's right.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.
And then the other thing I wanted to say was, in the beginning you were talking about what is a devotee, what is his qualities, etc., etc. And then I was just thinking, I heard one arrival of Prabhupada at the airport. Where, I think it was at the airport where one reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, if you see a devotee, how will you recognize him? And then Prabhupada thought for 1 minute and then he said, oh, if you see a devotee, he will be a real gentleman.
Yeah, that was so the TV station interview in Gainesville, Florida. Yes.
So I wanted to ask now, there's also gentlemen in the material concept of life, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Now, what is the gentleman in the devotee, what is the mood of a devotee as a gentleman?
Yes. What is the difference between a material gentleman and a spiritual gentleman? Yeah. Material gentleman means sattva-gun. Sattva-gun means he is full of good qualities, but because it is still material, sattva-gun, there is still tinges of passion and ignorance. Raja and Tama are still present to some degree in the consciousness. When that person becomes completely purified through elevation of the transcendental platform, then his goodness becomes pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva, which means now there is no longer any tinge of passion or ignorance present in his goodness. So, we see that even the nice people in this material world, sometimes they lose it. I mean, it happened recently in the U.S., actually in Austin, where I'm from. One gentleman became very angry at the IRS because he had a big IRS bill. So he got in an airplane, he loaded it, put a bunch of gasoline tanks in a little airplane, And he took his airplane and flew it into the IRS building. Luckily, that day, it was a day off for all the workers. It was just he only killed one IRS worker, and he killed himself. But the people said he was a nice guy. He was in a rock band, you know, like a part-time rock band, you know. Said, yeah, he's really a nice guy. And what happened to him? You see? So we see in the material world that somebody can be really a nice person and be very friendly and nice and cordial, but he's got some problems going on the inside, you know. They're just like a storm is going on the inside. So the material gentlemen of this world, they're not, you know, they act nicely. They show a nice behavior, courteous, kind, friendly. They can show that. But there's these problems going on the side of everyone, certain anxieties, certain difficulties. Like death, for example. The death problem is haunting every one of us. And until we come to the transcendental platform, that problem is not solved. The death problem. So people, they suppress these things. They try to put them away. But deep within, these things are gnawing on their consciousness. And they can come out. The gentleman of this material world, he can suppress his raja and tama. But sometimes it just comes out in a very ugly, unplanned way that you wouldn't expect it to happen. But if one comes to Krishna consciousness, even neophyte devotees sometimes lose it. They curb down, they appear to be very advanced sometimes. They can do wonderful service for many, many long years. We've seen, we had even big leaders in our movement. They've appeared very advanced, but they had certain things, certain influence of tama and rajas in the heart, but has not been completely conquered yet. And then one day, boom, it came out and took over their consciousness, and now they're gone. So, the transcendental gentleman, as Prabhupada described in that TV broadcast, the TV interview in Gainesville many years ago. I think it was 73. That gentleman means that person who is truly gentle all the way through. He's conquered rajas and tamas also. He's not just a show battle gentleman like the materialist, who seems to be a very nice gentleman. But he's actually a gentleman through and through. That's the difference. That someone who is truly a gentleman, the transcendentalist, he remains a gentleman in every situation. Even in the most trying, disturbing of situations, he never loses his gentlemanness. Because he has conquered that rajagun, tamagun. Completely conquered it. Whereas the material gentleman, at any time he may flip out and become a madman. That's the difference. Now for us neophytes who are somewhere in between, we're just hoping we can control it long enough to completely conquer it. We're making that transition, you see, from sattva-gun to shuddha-sattva. We're just hoping that we can hang in there long enough to where those tinges of passion and ignorance are completely gone. We can maintain our rounds, maintain our principles, maintain nice and devotee relationships, maintain active service for Prabhupada's mission. We're just praying for the mercy of our spiritual masters and Srila Prabhupada that we can remain steady, in spite of the fact that we're still tortured by rajas and tamas within the heart. Yeah.
Prabhu, when you were speaking, I was just thinking, I don't like to use the word maybe, but I was just thinking, did Prabhupada really mean a well-wisher of all living entities? That means gentleman, a well-wisher of all living entities.
Yeah, the true gentleman.
So when I was thinking about gentle, I was thinking about well-wisher means gentle.
Yes, that's a very interesting study. To look at the word well-wisher, and the word gentle. gentle means there's also rough. There's gentle and there's rough. Or we say ruffian, or in India, gunda, you see. Are in Sanskrit, adhira. The Goswamis are famous. Dhira dhira jana priyo priyo karo. They're famous for being gentle, both to the gentle and to the ruffians. So that is the true gentleman. If I wish you well, then that means I am gentle. I'm not rough with you, or unkind with you, or abusive of you, or inconsiderate of you. So the concept of well-wisher and gentle, they're very closely connected with each other. I'm always gentle, being gentle with you. Even when I think about you, I'm not being rough with you. I'm being gentle with you within my heart even. You see? I'm not, to be rough with someone, that's, of course, the Prabhupada sometimes appear to be very rough with us. But that was not his lack of gentleness. That was a teaching method. Prabhupada, one time in Mexico City, the devotees had been out very late for a preaching program the night before. And they didn't come for Mangalarti. And during the Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada, you could say he roughed them up. And he really chastised, and they were shaking. And he was very heavy. And Chitsu Kanandrapu, our temple president, he said he always followed Prabhupada around like a little puppy dog. So he said after the lecture, he followed Prabhupada out of the room, out of the temple room. It's a tropical climate. There's wild, nice flowers growing, aromatic flowers growing. So he picked one flower and offered it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada had been roaring like Nrsimhadev, and now he smelled this flower, he was like a little gentle lamb. And he said, Prabhupada, you were so angry, but now you're so gentle. How is that, Prabhupada? It was an instant change of mood. Prabhupada said, actually, I'm never angry with my disciple. But that is for instructing you. You see? So actually, that person who is fixed in Krishna consciousness, he may appear to be the most... I have an ashringa anger sometimes. But there's no roughness. There's not even a tinge of roughness in his head. Therefore, of course, we cannot imitate such exalted transcendental anger. But devotees felt blessed whether Prabhupada is sweetly speaking to them or is chastising them like anything. It was all Prabhupada's mercy. We felt how much we were blessed. Oh, the Prabhupada has chastised me, you see, very heavily. You see, it's all his gentleness. So it looks like we got a few more minutes left. Any more questions? Everyone's happy, everyone's satisfied, feeling blissed out. Actually, that's a word in the dictionary now. They blissed out, made it into the unabridged dictionary. It's an official English phrase, blissed out.
Fried is going to be there too.
Huh?
I suppose fried out is going to come next.
I don't know, yeah. Yeah, that's one of those old ISKCON lingo things, you know. Prabhu, I'm really fried. But actually, Prabhupada uses the word fried in a positive sense in his books. How you can fry out all the sins, you see. I say, but Prabhu, you should get completely fried out. All of that pop, completely fry it out of your heart, you see. are you 100% fried out, Prabhu? You're only partially fried. May you become completely fried. All that the seed of sinful desire is completely fried out of your heart, you see. Prabhupada uses it like that in a positive sense, fried. Yeah?
If you're really fried today, ISKCON means you're fried to a crisp.
Everyone?
If you're really fried today in ISKCON, more than fried, let's say you're fried to a crisp.
We want to be completely fried out in that sense, yeah.
They
all those sinful desires be completely fried out of my heart, you know. Turn up the heat on the fire, let it all burn up and go away, you know. All the lust, all the anger, all the greed, all the madness, the illusion, the envy, maybe it all be completely fried out of my heart by the the wonderful mercy of Guru and Krishna and Vaishnavas. So there's nothing else. We can stop here. And we thank you very much for your kindly attending our class today. I'm very much appreciative of that you all are here in such a wonderful temple. I've never seen this temple before. I'm just completely in a state of awe. See, what wonderful temple. This is not, it's just not in this material world. Definitely not in this material world. Transcendental abode somehow planted here within the material existence for the mercy of Prabhupada and Prabhupada's followers. So thank you for being here and doing such wonderful, wonderful service of Prabhupada's mission. So I just hope you'll bless me that I can become completely fried up. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.